Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
10 Russian intelligence officers have been arrested, allegedly for spying on the U.S.
Now, according to the complaint, which reads like a spy novel, the suspects were controlled and directed by Moscow.
What could be the largest swap of secret agents since the Cold War.
Real dramatic moments here this morning on the tarmac behind me at Vienna Airport, reminiscent of the old Cold War-style prisoner exchanges that used to take place on bridges in Berlin.
And just like that, it was over. The seemingly ordinary men and women who had lived in U.S. cities and suburbs for over a decade were arrested and revealed as secret Russian agents a little late last month. Less than 2 weeks after being swept up by the FBI, the group, which included a married couple living in Cambridge, were sent home to Russia in exchange for 4 Russian prisoners. But before they pleaded guilty to conspiracy charges and were handed over on a Vienna airstrip, the Russian agents faced prosecution in U.S. criminal court and had regular civilian attorneys. Those attorneys say they were caught off guard by the spy swap as much as anybody, and that lawyers on both sides were pawns in what felt like a foreign policy version of a speed chess match. So, listeners, what do you think? Was the exchange a carefully orchestrated charade to show the improved relationships between Russia and the U.S.? Or did the two nations scramble to save face after a political landmine and then move quickly to quiet rumors of vestigial Cold War agents? What questions do you have for the lawyers of the Cambridge spy couple? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also, as always, find us online at wbur.org/Boston. Well, joining us now are the two attorneys who represented the Cambridge couple. Robert Sheketoff represented Elena Vavilova, also known as Tracy Lee Ann Foley. Robert Sheketoff, welcome to Radio Boston.
Nice to be here.
Also with us here in the studio is Peter Krupp. He was attorney for Andrei Bezrukhov, a.k.a. Donald Howard Heathfield. And Peter Krupp, welcome to you.
Thank you, Meghna.
Well, let me just start by asking both of you, Peter, if you could go first. How did you come to represent Andrei Bezrukhov?
I was hired by him to represent him. Mm-hmm. I got a call out of the blue. I had heard that the couple had been arrested, and so when I got the call, I had a hunch I knew what it was about.
And Robert Sheketoff, was it similar that you Tracy Leanne Foley, Elena Vavilova just decided to have you as her counsel?
Very similar.
Okay. And what was your reaction to the request? Because these folks were all obviously already in the news.
Well, I thought it would be a very interesting case, and it turned out to be.
Have either of you represented accused spies before?
No, it was new for me.
I've done it hundreds and hundreds of
times. Those are all the spies that we never heard of who live in Cambridge.
Yeah, this was my first.
Okay. Did you? I mean, I'm not going to ask you, not to violate any attorney-client privilege, but do you have a sense as to how your clients found you or chose you as their attorneys, Peter Krupp?
I don't know for sure, but I think that appointed counsel that had been appointed by the court at the initial appearance gave them a list of people whom they might consider hiring, and I think both Bob and myself were on the list.
Okay. Well, so, Peter, let me ask you, this is such a mind-bending case that moved at such high speeds that, you know, many people said a lot of things, and we were looking back at some of the media coverage of the case, and we remember that you had said that initially the government's case was against the couple was, quote, extremely thin, and that the couple did nothing more than successfully infiltrate neighborhoods, cocktail parties, and the PTA. Do you still believe that?
Well, I haven't seen anything different. We know that the government watched these folks for 10 years. They had all kinds of authorized wiretaps, and they were listening in on their conversations. They searched the home multiple times, took pictures of things that were in the home. They searched safe deposit boxes, and after 10 years of investigation, they never disclosed a single secret that either of Bob or my two clients had ever taken or sent back to Russia. So I really don't see anything more here. Maybe there were more insidious purposes, but we haven't been shown that, and we don't have evidence of that right now.
But Robert Sheketov, I understand that that your clients were presented with a 39-page complaint, essentially, from the U.S. government when they did appear in court. And, you know, I can imagine that in those 39 pages, we read that they had found things like pop or soda cans with fake tops and bottoms, and that seems like a little low-tech spy equipment there. But do you agree with Peter Krupp that really there wasn't anything that you felt could have given the government a strong case?
Well, they had a strong case on a relatively minor charge, but they didn't have a strong case I don't think they had any case at all for an espionage charge, which was never lodged at any point. I mean, what they pled guilty to was a conspiracy to act as agents of the Russian Federation in the United States without registering first with the Attorney General of the United States. That charge carried a maximum penalty of 5 years. And I think what Peter was referring to and what I'm certainly referring to is something more serious than that, there seems to be no evidence of at all.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder how, if you can, as much as you're able to walk us through those first couple days when you took both Andrea and Elena on as clients. And first of all, your sense of them and how you began to get your head around these cases and try and prepare for them, Peter Krupp.
Well, the first thing we do is read that 30-some-odd page affidavit and try to figure out what the case is about. My client, Mr. Bezrukov, was very engaged in it, wanted to be as involved as possible. The case was resolved so quickly that it was difficult even to start to think about defending the case. We had an initial appearance. We scheduled the case for a later detention hearing, which was scheduled for July 16, and before we even got geared up for that, which would be the first proceeding ordinarily in federal court, we were told that there was a deal to resolve the case. And I learned of that deal first from a representative of the Russian embassy. I did not learn that from the U.S. Attorney's Office, which is the way things usually happen.
And apparently, if I read correctly, that you learned of it from a representative of the Russian embassy in a jailhouse meeting, essentially.
Yes, that was in Plymouth County Correctional Facility the Tuesday morning before the Thursday when both Mr. Sheketov and my clients were on a plane to Moscow. So the deal was proposed to us roughly 24 hours before the plea, and a few hours later they were on a plane.
Robert Sheketov, did you also find out so abruptly and not from prosecutors or the United States government that a swap was in the works?
I found out from Peter Krupp after he had his conversation with the Russian embassy officials. And this was a case that was decided way above the heads of anybody that was acting here in Boston, and apparently way above the heads of anyone that was acting in New York City. So I don't know if it was president to president or CIA to CIA or what, but this was not a typical case.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was later reported, at least in the New York Times, that the first time President Obama had known that the 10 or 11 folks that the FBI was watching was even before a very key meeting he was scheduled to have with Russian President Medvedev. So, and that at that early June meeting, the possibility of a spy swap was indeed discussed if the spies were to go on to be arrested, which they were. So is this a case, you know, Peter Krupp, where, Robert Sheketov says, you felt like you were immediately a pawn in a game that was already in play?
I don't know about immediate, but very soon we realized that this was going to be decided well above us. You know, in my view, we, as on the defense, have an obligation to represent our client's best interest, and they were making our clients an offer they couldn't refuse. The prosecution was, in my view, really doing what was asked of them by the executive branch, which had made a deal, and the judge was willing to go along with the whole package.
Mm-hmm. Robert Shakhutov, what was the response, if you can tell us, or the initial reaction from Elena Vavilova, also known as Tracy Leanne Foley, when this deal was put on the table before her?
Well, I think Peter said it well, which is this was a deal that no one could turn down. Time served, sent home virtually immediately. What's not to like about that?
Except for the fact that, I mean, they had children here, so did that present a complication to your clients?
Not really, because the government never made any claims that the children had done anything wrong, and they had spied on these people for over a decade and had access to virtually everything that most people consider to be private, and the federal government never made a claim against the kids. So the kids are young adults. I mean, one's 20, one's 16, and it seems to me they're free to work out the details of the rest of their life with their parents and with their own views about what should happen, and that there's no roadblocks here.
Mm-hmm. Peter Krupp, did you get that same sense that that Andrei Bezrukhov immediately said, well, yes, I'm taking this deal and we'll work out the details later?
Yeah, he was very interested in the deal because, as I say, it's sort of too good to pass up. I mean, the kids were always forefront in their minds about what they would decide to do in the case. The kids' well-being was their first concern, and this was the deal that would allow them to best deal with their kids' needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are talking about what happened behind the scenes of the U.S.-Russia spy swap with the attorneys who represented the two Russian spies from Cambridge. My guests are Peter Krupp, was attorney for Andrei Bezrukhov, also known as Donald Heathfield, and Robert Shakhutov. He represented Elena Vavilova, also known as Tracy Leanne Foley. You can join us if you have a question for these two attorneys. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Campbell's calling from Arlington. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Magna. I'm delighted to be here.
What's your thought for the day?
In listening to the coverage, I haven't heard anyone speak about the fact that our government spent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, investigating people for 10 years without any serious evidence that they had access to any serious information that might be useful to Russia or harmful to the United States. And it would be interesting to know if there wasn't any analysis somewhere along the line of whether or not this was worth the effort. These people were a bunch of clowns, and they were not gathering any serious information. They were not a threat to the country.
Mm-hmm.
Send them back for being unregistered agents, but to spend all of this time and resources seems silly to me.
So what does that make you think about the speed with which this spy swap deal seemed to occur? And, you know, as we're hearing from the two attorneys here, they didn't even know it was happening until it was basically a done deal. What does that make you think?
It makes me think two things. Number one, that the United States government was rightfully terribly embarrassed about the fact that this shows, again, that our covert institutions are not doing a very good job and are probably wasting tremendous resources in doing what they are doing. Second, even going back to the Cold War, it appears to me that we always give more people than we receive. I remember all of those Berlin bridge swaps, and there were always a lot more people from the American side than there were from the Russian side. So I would guess that there might have been double embarrassment, and they just wanted to get it over and out of the newspaper.
Campbell, thank you so much for your call. Robert Shakhutov, let me ask you, there's obviously this whole superstructure of foreign policy and what various administrations and governments think is good. But from your perspective as a defense lawyer, I mean, have you swapped stories with other attorneys where it seems like events move faster than you are able to keep up with in order to represent your client as well as you can? I mean, how frequently does this happen?
Well, maybe it happens in spy cases. This is my first spy case. I've never, ever seen a case like this before where Peter learned about the basic outlines of the deal before the assistant United States attorneys at our level who were negotiating with us learned about it. I mean, that's extremely unusual. This is just not an everyday case, and it was an experience.
Well, actually, let me follow up with you on just one other point on this. You know, I remember in one of, I believe, one of their first court appearances, the woman who we then knew as Tracy Lee Ann Foley wanted to be identified as defendant number 5. We didn't yet know what her true Russian name was, but her husband was at that point in time was still saying, do call me Donald Heathfield. Why is it that Elena Vavilova so soon after her first court appearance said, no, call me defendant number 5? Because that seemed, you know, in my mind to make me think there is something more going on here than maybe your clients had initially alleged.
Well, our clients didn't allege anything.
Or claimed, I should say.
That made the allegations, but that was my decision, not her decision, that she was defendant number 5, and it has to go to basically, you can't misrepresent in the federal court, and I wanted to take as neutral a position as possible in terms of who she was or wasn't. So it was at a time when we didn't know if this was a political hot potato that was going to be resolved way above our heads or it was a real criminal case.
Mm-hmm. Looks like we have a lot of callers here who really do want to know what's happening with the children of Elena Vavilova and Andrei Bezrukhov. Peter Krupp, can you tell us anything about that?
The kids' safety and whereabouts was all resolved well before their parents were on a plane to Moscow. It's been my view throughout that the kids are really innocent bystanders in all this. And as much as people are interested, I can say that they're safe. I can say that they're being taken care of. And but I, beyond that, I think I can't comment.
Okay. Robert Sheketov, did you have a chance or through this whole process, did you speak with prosecutors? Because I imagine, I mean, I've been reading that in the New York Times that even the United States attorney kind of felt like this was all moving faster than he could keep up. So did everyone on all sides feel as if they weren't in control of the situation?
Well, I had a conversation on Thursday morning, the day that the clients fled and flew out of JFK, with one of the prosecutors, and I said, it's pretty amazing that we were able to iron out this agreement in such detail and so quickly without ever having spoken with each other.
If only all cases were that efficient. Peter Krupp, have you been in contact with your client, Andrei Bezrukhov, since his return to Russia?
Yes, he's doing fine.
Can you tell us any more than that?
I don't know very much more than that. He's reached out to me and told me that he's doing fine, but beyond that, I don't know what his current plans are.
Okay, so when you step back and look at this whole situation and the two sort of blistering weeks that you spent being involved with this case, what's really kind of your takeaway from how all this was handled and your role in it?
Well, my role, as I say, has been relatively minimal in representing him and achieving anything for him, because largely this was a deal that was put on a platter for him. But what's interesting to me is the fact that because the government was watching these folks for so long, the U.S. government could have decided to arrest them and use them in negotiations at any point it chose. And it chose this particular time. And one thing that I don't understand, and still, you know, as much as I've thought about it, talked to people, I still don't understand why it was that they decided to arrest these folks now.
Well, apparently it's partially because your client, the FBI said, had plans to leave the country, and they were afraid he wouldn't come back.
Yeah, I don't think that's particularly credible, given my clients had just purchased a house. His son was in school in the United States. It just didn't ring true.
Okay, well, that is Peter Krupp. He is attorney for Andrei Bezrukhov. We also once knew him as Donald Heathfield, half of the Cambridge spy couple. Peter Krupp, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we were also joined by Robert Sheketov. He represented Elena Vavilova, a.k.a. Tracy Lee Ann Foley. Robert Sheketov, thank you as well for joining us today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a wonderful weekend and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.